Coming up on Life is a Festival.
Our intention was to create a love bomb so magnificent, so co-created together with everyone, that it would ripple out into the universe forevermore and go on its own journey.
What are the physics of a love bomb? I mean, like, what's the blast radius of a love bomb?
Well, it's still going.
Okay. It's still going.
We can't really tell you, but for me, it never dies and it's kind of an infinite thing that changes shape and form. At that time, the meaning of love bomb for us was we hope that we could express the love that we have for ourselves and each other enough that that gives permission to these people to feel enough love for themselves that they can share it with whoever they experience love with and not let any confines like gender or straight, gay, this, that or the other come between their expression of love in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and of course, as always, my fellow travelers, welcome back to Life is a Festival. I am your host, Eamon Armstrong. Well, thank you for your patience. I was sick. I got dengue fever. I'm in Thailand at the moment, and I got dengue fever, which was wild. Luckily, I'm the kind of guy who does drugs, and by that I mean medicines, which meant that I could experience my dengue fever as an initiation of sorts. It was very challenging, but I feel like I learned something about myself. And if you are going to be an adventurous traveler at some point, a little mosquito is going to slow you down. Anyway, I am back and I am so excited that today's episode is about love. We need a love episode, don't we? Not only is this a love episode, but this is the colors of love episode. All of the messy colors of love. And I think the more we see love in different messy shades, the more that we can see the love that innervates through all things and innervates through these different patterns of relationships that come together and separate. I know many of us, myself included, have had painful separations where the love remains, and often it can return in another form. And that is the story today. So today I'm interviewing my friends Gwen and Liz here on Koh Phangan about their festival, Colors of Love, which started as their wedding. The story is so interesting because they created this beautiful festival as a wedding and it was so meaningful for the community. And then, spoiler alert, they separated. And they separated during throwing another iteration of the festival. And I thought, gosh, that is a story. I want to know how that happened, how that went, how they chose love even whilst saying goodbye to that particular love at the very site of its consummation. Consummation? I think that means fucking. The very site of their betrothal. So on the show, we talk about the messy colors of love. We talk about whether or not this festival was a big gay wedding. Do we call it a big gay wedding? We talk about the idea of women-run festivals. Do festivals run by women have a women's touch? We talk about celebration in separation and what it means to choose love. We talk about the island of Koh Phangan, where I have been for the past few months working on my book, and I'm very grateful to be here. We talk about some of the contradictions here and cultural sensitivity in terms of throwing events in other cultures, in other lands, and how these two women have navigated that. And finally, we end our show with what Colors of Love looks like this year, which is coming up right around the corner. So if you are heading to Colors of Love, you may enjoy this podcast. And if you are not heading to Colors of Love, you may go to a future iteration. So Gwen and Liz, not only are they founders of Colors of Love, but they also perform together as Wild Surrender. They are musicians, they are entrepreneurs, and they have a dream, which you'll have to wait until the end of the episode for, because this episode is about love. It's also about dreams. Anyway, I think you'll be delighted, and hopefully this will allow you to look at love in a slightly more colorful way. And without further ado, here are Gwen and Liz. All right, so
beautiful thing about a podcast is that a podcast is kind of like a festival. Isn't that weird? Everything's like a festival to me. A podcast is like a festival because you're taking a certain kind of intention where you kind of call in a sort of possibility for things to happen. And there can be a kind of courage that happens in these spaces that can sometimes be unexpected. We use these festival spaces as an opportunity to be radically real with what our experience is. And we're in a container where we can do that. And then that allows things to evolve and come up and play and combust and reform and that sort of thing. And so the fact of the mic and the fact of like my like stewardship of the space means that this is also a container. So the fact that you have big emotions, and I can imagine what was going on at the festival when the two of you were separating was also very big, means that there's that we can tap into what is real in this moment. And you can be angry at each other, and you can love each other, and you can be two perfectly different people that could only make what you made because of what is most beautiful and what is most terrifying about each of your ways of being. How does that sound?
About right.
About right. About right. Okay. So I would like each of you to look at the other one. And I would like each of you to say one thing that you just fucking love about the person that you're looking at. I would like you to look at your friend who sometimes pisses you off and tell them one thing that you just fucking love about them.
I love your ability to share your truth without any flip-flap around it, with the absolute certainty of who you are coming through, like a dagger to the heart. The way that it lands is very clear, and you will not be swayed in what is your truth.
And how does that make your festival better? How does that quality that you admire make Colors of Love stronger?
I think it grounds the extraordinary abstract visions for a utopia into something that is very real and connected to this world now.
So Liz makes things real. No bullshit. It's happening. This is what's real. This is how I feel. This is how we bring it into the world, into this space.
Yes.
How do you feel about that? Do you feel like that's accurate about you?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like that about yourself?
I do.
Yeah. I like that about you too. You know what's funny is like, I'm not on the receiving end of your truthful reflection of me because it's just not, it hasn't really been necessary to be like, hey, Eamon. But I kind of feel it in you. Like, I feel like if I needed to get a little, I feel like I could trust you to do that for me. Like I could trust you to call me up if I needed it. I feel that from you.
Yeah, I guess that's the space I hold too for people in the community. If they want the truth about something, or my thing is cut the crap. So I'm really helpful for people if they want to cut the crap in their life, because I'll just tell them how it is. And maybe things they didn't see about themselves, I can see. I think that is my superpower. But sometimes it can be against me as well, because I learned a really good saying recently: truth without compassion is brutality. And I realized where I've been brutal in my truth at times, because I haven't stopped and thought about how to be a little bit more compassionate towards the people that I talk to. And sometimes that is Gwen, for sure.
Compassion without truth is bullshit.
Yeah, that's total
it's
bullshit.
Just bullshit.
It's exactly,
just,
you know, like it's the same
it's
thing.
Bullshit. It's bullshit. And the reason that I say that is because in our festival world, the worst of our festival world is that. The worst of our festival world is compassion without truth, is this fluffy escapist bullshit.
Absolutely. Right?
So like to anchor things into reality is something that this culture needs, because if we don't have it, it can get actually really ugly. And some of the things that I find hardest about this island are that. And one of the titles might be something like spiritual narcissism, or like the world is a playground of the self and I'm ascending and I love everyone and everyone loves me, love and light, and it's cheaper to be here and someone's going to clean my house for me for not that much money, but I deserve it because I manifested it or whatever. That to me, that's in the realm of compassion without truth.
Totally. And it's also spiritual BS and it's also bypassing so much of the reality of the situation and being a taker of an environment that's around you, which this island has the potential of being a bit of a taking and not giving and not realizing how much you're abusing the local people around you and how much the local people around you have maybe been the decision makers in giving up their land to this sort of environment, but at the same time, not really taking into consideration the resources that this island has and the limited resources that this island has, like the water.
Like water to the mountain villas, for example.
Yeah.
We'll get more into that in our conversation today. But before, we've got lots of places we want to go. Liz, what do you love about Gwen?
It's real to say that sometimes it feels like a love-hate relationship because of our history, but Gwen has an unwavering ability to transcend her chaos and turn that into a very beautiful creation. So I know that she takes a lot of responsibility that I don't take in ways in Colors of Love that are more pressurized, so to speak. And I love that she has the strength in herself to keep rising above her stress and making this happen for our community, because without both of us in equal measure, Gwen does take a lot of the financial risks and holds that space that I don't hold. So the pressure for her is a lot more. And so I love that she will transcend all obstacles to continue to make this vision happen through hell or high water.
How does that feel?
Thank you for recognizing that.
It is not a problem that we are coming from a space of friction before doing this conversation, because a space of friction is clearly part of the creation of this festival. So why would it be the case that there wouldn't be some in the context of this podcast? In fact, if the two of you showed up and you were like, you know what, we are just here and we both are perfectly in alignment, we know exactly what we're both going to say and we're just going to do it, we're just going to roll the thing out, I might be a bit cheated. I might feel like I didn't get the full... Because this is the thing. You called your festival Colors of Love. And there are many colors of love. You use the expression love-hate, which actually I got to say, I don't like the expression love-hate as an expression. Because the hate that's part of love-hate is one of the colors of love. Because it isn't really hate. Because if it was really hate, you two wouldn't have gotten your shit together to be here and have this conversation, right? The fact that there's colors of that is okay because that's part of it. It's interesting, colors of love can be a messy thing because we are humans. Have either of you seen the quote about like, you are not here for unconditional love, you're here for messy love, for unrequited love, for obsessive love, you're here for the full spectrum of love. You came from unconditional love, you returned to unconditional love, but you're not here for that. You're here to learn the colors of love. And so here we are. Welcome to Life as a Festival. We're going to have a conversation today about the colors of love. Thank you for being on my show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I really appreciate your recognition of colors of love and the broad spectrum, the real life spectrum that includes, because one of the reasons we called it Colors of Love was because we realized that there was this extraordinary experience that we were having as humans together on this planet in this very psychedelic existence where everything ultimately is love, or it is just a separation from it, and a variety of that. And how could we create a space where people felt truly accepted for who they are, where they felt welcomed, where they felt a home with themselves, where they could accept their shadows with love, that is one of the reasons why we created that space. And certainly in our experience with each other, which has gone from friendship to lovers to married to separation, not quite divorced yet, ultimately divorced by proxy, but we have experienced the colors of love in ourselves and each other.
And this morning.
And this morning.
This morning we have experienced the colors of love.
Yeah, because we are two very different people. We couldn't be more opposite. It really is Aries, Cancerian, fire, water. She likes egg white. I like egg yolk.
Wait, you're Aries, you're Cancer?
Yes.
Okay, I don't believe in this at all, but my recent ex, Cancer, oh. Aries. I don't believe in it, but figured it's worth saying.
In most of our moments of conflict over our long now relationship of friends or partners, we would complain the other was either droughting our river or putting out our fire. Yeah, it's really, we see things so very differently, but our vision is the same.
Colors of Love started as a wedding, celebration of your love. And I think that for listeners to the podcast who have no idea about you or this festival or a festival in Thailand or anything like that, there's something that's like, oh, it's like a lesbian wedding. And it's a festival that's a lesbian wedding. So let's start with that. How do you each identify as erotic beings in the world? Was this a lesbian wedding?
For me, I don't really identify with the word lesbian. Having been with only women in long-term relationship throughout my life, I still don't identify as a lesbian or resonate with that label. I definitely resonate with I'm Liz and I am who I am and I like to love who I love. It doesn't mean I haven't been with men in my life and I'm also very attracted to men. But I've never had a long-term relationship with a man. But I guess for the outsider look coming to the wedding, they're going to a lesbian wedding. But for me, I'm marrying a soul that I really love at the time. And yeah, I don't identify as a lesbian or having had a lesbian wedding. But I'm sure everybody at the wedding thought they were coming to a lesbian wedding. But for Gwen being straight, or whatever that means, so to speak, in her history and marrying a woman, I think it's a different story for you.
Yeah, I mean, we all have the joke that I wasn't a lesbian, I was a lesbian. But for me, again, I love the depth and the soul of someone. I don't really have a preference on how they appear in terms of gender. And in my history, I had only mainly been with men in long-term relationships. And I'm a very feminine woman. I think I tend to meet more men that are a fit for me just because of that typical male-female balance. But yeah, I glided very easily into relationships with women. And certainly if I consider myself, I also don't consider myself a lesbian. I don't consider myself straight either. I would, if I had to use a term, which I don't really like using the terms, but I would consider myself queer because I'm happy to go with whatever the feeling is in terms of sexuality. It's just whatever is calling me and whatever feels good and magnetic. And I did hear a lot before we were getting married that there was a big gay wedding, and that was ours. I kept hearing from other people about our big gay wedding, but I was just marrying what I considered to be my soulmate in whatever form they arrived in. And it's quite funny, actually. Some time before we met and got together, I'd had this big internal prayer of meeting my soulmate, and they were going to be my creative muse, and we were going to share our deepest visions for the world together and bring them into existence through our own perfectly harmonized energies. And I also imagined that it was this, of course, drop-dead gorgeous man, turned out it was Liz.
Turns out it was a drop-dead gorgeous man. Liz, you are quite handsome. You've got this... I'm Aussie. My dad's Aussie, so I think of just Outback swagger, even though you're Kiwi, which I'm sure just would piss you off. But you've got that kind of like frontier swagger to you.
Yeah, I think it comes from the time living in the Outback in Australia.
Oh, yeah? Okay, well, so that's what I was going to say. You've got a bit of an Outback. You've got an Outback machismo that I haven't seen a lot of people with penises able to swag in that way. So good on you. And the point of it is, what is gender? What is sexuality? I think all three of us love the idea of not being in the boxes and what that permits and the permissiveness that gives to others. I too like the term queer because I like it as a catch-all. And I like queer because queer is part of inquiry. It's an inquiry. My sexuality is an inquiry. I once posted an Instagram from me at Pride in San Francisco, and I wrote straight guy for the queer eye. And then to make sure that I was being really honest, I said, JK, I have no idea what my sexuality is. And I feel like that ambiguity and that not knowing and that ability to say yes to something that's happening, where not only do we not have an identity that we're limited by, but actually we're so unlimited that we can step into identities if we wish to. We can say, I'm having hot girl summer, which is what I did a little hot girl summer when I first arrived on this island. And then I didn't want to do it anymore. But the point being, I think it's interesting to kind of blow that up, the big gay wedding, because it's like, oh, that's what it is. It's that. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it is. So if it's not a big gay wedding, what is it?
I think it's just love in all its forms, and it transcends labels. And I think we've been indoctrinated to think man and woman, straight or gay, black or white, all these different religions. And for me, none of that really matters. It's like you love who you love, and at any point you can fall in love with someone and it could really transcend all of your belief systems. And I think by us coming together and having this wedding that was a very big community wedding, we did give permission to people to transcend their belief systems and also feel into themselves around the things that arise, you know, around how they identify in themselves and also how they label others. And it has given a community permission to explore themselves in a more boundless way.
Yeah, and also I think our intention for our wedding also provided the foundation for that. We got married actually in New Zealand, where you're from, and so we'd had our legal wedding, and we actually made it very, even though it was signing the papers at a registry, we made it important because it was sacred to us. And then we were going to have this wedding with 200-300 people for a week on a beach in Koh Phangan in Thailand, and we really wanted to get clear, because we do want everything that we've created together since we met. What is our intention? What is our intention for this? Why are we doing this? You know, we've already signed the papers. Why are we getting married in front of all these people? And our intention was to be witnessed in our love, to share our love and our vision for love with our community, and also to create a love bomb so magnificent, co-created together with everyone, that it would ripple out into the universe forevermore and go on its own journey, you know, and create this endless, infinite touch point.
What are the physics of a love bomb? Like, what's the blast radius of a love bomb?
Well, it's still going.
Okay. It's still going.
We can't really tell you, but for me, love, the way I see it, it never dies, and it's kind of an infinite thing that changes shape and form. Obviously, Guinevere and I are a really good example of how it's changed shape and form throughout our journey. However, at that time, the meaning of love bomb for us was, we hope that we could express the love that we have for ourselves and each other enough that that gives permission to these people to feel enough love for themselves that they can take that into their life and share it with whoever they experience love with in their life, and not let any confines like gender or straight, gay, this, that, or the other come between their expression of love in the world. And that was all I was intending and hoping for in that experience. And it's very funny, at the wedding, people were coming up to us and saying, what did you put in the drinks here? Have you spiked the drinks? And we said, yeah, with love. It wasn't like that kind of event, but it was a very beautiful human experiment of watching how just loving each other so greatly allowed the people at the festival to feel that love within themselves.
Yeah.
And that love bomb is, like I said, still rippling.
And I think when you give people an opportunity to celebrate love, they take it in all ways they can. Ultimately, we want connection. We want co-creation. We want to feel the depth of ourselves in each other. That's what we're here to do as humans. And I recognize, or we recognized in that experience of getting married, just how much people thrived in the space of celebrating love, of being given that permission to say, I believe in something. I want to celebrate it. I want to exist in this frequency. I want to exist in this way.
So there's a festival in BC called Base Coast, and it was founded by Liz Thompson and Andrea Graham, also known as The Librarian. And I went to that festival in 2016, and I was told that it had a woman's touch. That was the expression that was given to me. And I was reviewing festivals at the time. I was like, okay, so here's this festival and it's run by women. That must mean that it is different. And that must mean, of course, it is better, right? It has a women's touch. It must be better. And it's interesting how my thinking evolved by going to that festival and by having interviews and by talking to Andrea especially about why that wasn't the right way to look at it. And for her, especially about DJing and about being tokenized on lineups and that sort of thing, it's like, well, why is the gender a thing? But it's also not a thing, because when you have women running a festival, you have better lit toilets, for example. There are aspects that you could call a woman's touch, because there's a blind spot for men who aren't thinking about safety in the same way, who aren't thinking about certain aspects of comfort and ease in the same way. So it's a kind of both and, which I love, which is don't reduce it to gender, and yet it's not that gender doesn't matter. And so I'm curious, as producers of a boutique festival, a festival in Thailand, you've been to a lot of festivals, you've performed at festivals. What were some of the details, what have been and continue to be some of the details of Colors of Love that may be a woman's touch, maybe a sort of amorphous queerness, wherever it comes from? What are the specific little details, or some examples of specific little details that you utilize to make this particular experience different than others you'd attended?
For me, it is the deep consideration of every single moment of someone's experience, potential experience, and the community's collective experience together, from the beginning to the end, the start to the finish, and then thereafter. And I'm all about the details. Liz is not about the details. Thankfully, one of us is very focused and one is not. And that has its own benefits. But for me, it is putting myself in that emotional journey, in that, also, you could say, in that spiritual journey of connecting with myself and others, and how I can facilitate someone's experience as the creator of Colors of Love from the beginning to the end. And it's the little touches all the time of bringing people together in safety. That's really the thing, is how do you create moments where people can feel safe to connect with each other, to be vulnerable, to feel welcomed, to feel accepted, to feel encouraged, and to be celebrated? And how quickly can you do that from the moment someone arrives, or even before?
Yeah, tell me about the before, because there's some detail about the before that's a little unique about this particular event.
Yeah, so people have often asked, why do we have to register for Colors of Love? And we do have a registration form, and it's very simple, but there's one question on it which people are invited to answer. I think it's something like, when we come together with collective intention as a community, we have the power to change anything. If you were fully resourced and there were no obstacles, how would you share your colors of love in the world? And it's quite a simple question, but it's an instant filter because people will not come to our event that don't want to spend the time answering that question. And for those that are intent on coming, it starts the journey for them internally of how would I color the world with love? What is the thing that I would do to bring love into this world? What is that particular part of me that wants to be expressed in this world? You know, is there a particular gift or sharing that I want to give to the world? And so people start on this quite subconscious and quite subtle journey. But the answers that people give are extraordinary. People feel quite safe, I think, when they're writing a registration form from the comfort of their own home to write something meaningful. And that's what they arrive with. And they've all answered that question. And when they get there, there is a certain feeling that they're all there for something. And our festival, yes, it's a music, arts and wellness experience, but it focuses on dream activation. The point of it is activating the big dream in your heart, what it is you want to be, do, create, share, experience in the world. What are you here for? At least now, in this moment, what are you here for? And I think when people arrive, they instantly know that they're bonded as a family, at least in this, that they have come to celebrate this in some way. They're not sure how. But it's then my role as the creator of that space to bring them into moments of connection, moments of community from the very beginning, so that they can start to feel safe with each other because they're on a journey. And we never, ever at our experience have more than one experience happening at the same time. So there's only one stage, you know, there's one through line experience for everyone, so that we're always together being brought into these moments of shared experience.
So the first iteration of this event was a wedding, celebration of your love. That's easier than an iteration of the event that was a celebration of your parting. I love this story. I love it. I think it's such an interesting thing, especially with the name Colors of Love, that one of the events that you did, the first event, was a wedding, and you were fuck yeah, and you're there, and it's yes, this is our thing. But also, you ended up separating. You ended up not in legally yet, but divorcing. And from what I understand, you were right in the thick of that process while throwing a festival. So your business partners, your best friends, probably not feeling like best friends in that moment, and your wife and about to not be, and you threw a fucking festival and managed to have that also be a color of love. And that's certainly something worth discussing, because that's quite something to pull off. And I'm curious how that was managed. Did you have helpers? Did you have go-betweens? Were you talking directly to each other while going through a breakup and managing a business? What was the actual structure of throwing a festival while going through a breakup? Because I'll tell you right now, I couldn't do it. In my breakups, I could not throw a festival while going through a breakup.
It was an interesting moment because we separated and Guinevere, in full transparency, was exploring a new relationship with the man, which albeit is okay, no problem in my heart because I wanted her to pursue what she wanted at that time in her life potentially. However, it wasn't an easy breakup based on the fact, of course, as you've noticed today, we are the opposite. So the way in which we process is completely different. So it can get messy and have all of those colors of love like we mentioned. There was a moment when I was on the other side of the world and we said, are we going to do this festival? And we both had to separate ourselves from our own individual journeys and the pain around being separated and decide what's more important, transcending pain and suffering in a breakup and still showing up for our community, because at that point, our community journey had been already 3 years and the community mission for us felt bigger than the drama around separating. So we decided together that we would go ahead with the festival at whatever it cost between us and our communications. We were still going to show up for the community. And it was a really interesting journey because we arrived at the event with new partners, and our community already had a lot to deal with in our separation because they put us on a pedestal in a way of being this really beautiful beacon of love and relationship. And then they also had to feel our breakup and go through their own kind of understanding around their issues, whether they've had childhood traumas around their parents separating or whatever. It brought up a whole different kettle of worms that we weren't even aware of.
Were you basically their parents separating for some of your
attendees? Yes, we were their parents separating.
I mean, I will say that I just saw somebody a few days ago. We're in 2024 right now. We separated in 2019. Or the festival we held was in March 2019. And they were just sharing with me a couple of days ago how deeply affected they were from a separation that we had 5 years ago. That was the first thing they wanted to share. And it was really interesting. That really landed for people. You know, and what's been beautiful is that, as Liz said, we made the choice. We were actually on the phone. She was in Australia. I was in Mexico. And we said, who are we to take this away from people who considered it their community co-creation and experience? And we also have a music duo together. And we said, well, what about Wild Surrender? And I said, well, I love what we do as Wild Surrender. And she said, so do I. And I was like, okay, so we go ahead. And I remember Liz actually saying to me, this is going to be the hardest thing that we have ever done. And I said, I know. And she said, but we're going to do it because we love each other. Ultimately, we love each other. And we're going to get through this. And I said, yeah, we are.
Do you think that having to do the festival helped in the healing and bringing you back together in care of each other? Or do you think it made it more challenging?
It was 6 to 1, half a dozen the other. I mean, it was definitely challenging. It was highly entertaining.
Why do you say that? Why do you say entertaining?
Because I love observing how humans react to things. It's one of my favorite things to do. I'm like a sort of a clown and a joker in that respect, where things that trigger people entertain me in a sense that I can see, like, okay, we're humans, so how's this affecting someone? And it was really interesting because Guinevere had her new boyfriend there, and that came with its own story. I had my new girlfriend there, that came with its own story. Our community trying to learn to interact with these two new humans. It was challenging and entertaining, but we were able to always be professional, and we did have support people, each of us, that would have to communicate to her, or they communicate with me in the times that it was probably a little bit too sticky, just to keep it professional and classy.
I mean, what's really interesting is that it was the most extraordinary colors of love so far. It was so glorious. It was so beautiful. I remember being so in awe and in such ecstasy at times of this amazing experience that we were all in together. And people remarking to us saying, I can't believe you've created this in your separation. And I'd say, nor can I. Nor can I, but here we are. Here we are in the most amazing moments of bliss and connection and hedonism and euphoria. And it's coming through some of the greatest suffering I'd experienced in relationship in my life at that point.
This is one of the key life lessons that is dearest to my heart. The friction created by my challenges with mental health have made me humble and empathetic. Not that humble, but, you know, have allowed me to have a kind of compassion for others that I wouldn't have if I didn't have it. This friction creates unexpected eruptions, blossomings. Eruptions, yes. Blossomings also. And it's interesting timing-wise, because we had dinner last night and we spoke about this, but a former lover reached out to me just yesterday. And so much love, but so much pain in that separation. And there's something about the kind of love that transcends the pain of separation is a particular color of love. To have a deep, poignant romance with someone, to have that end, to feel the ripping apart of that, and the anger and the resentment and the you did this at this point and you did that at that point, and having all that, you really have a choice whether you're going to go the direction of resentment and closing off and souring, or whether you're going to open to it. And it makes me think about our dear listeners, whatever stage they're on in their lives. I'm sure that some of you out there listening to this podcast are wrestling with something like this. Loving someone and feeling so hurt and feeling like, oh, this is not going to work out as a romance, but I do love them. And I can imagine that some folks listening at the moment want to know how. How do I do it? How do I choose love? How do I choose love? Do you have any advice for listeners at home about how to choose love when your protective instinct is to turn sour?
I think for me, it's a very big spiritual muscle to flex, to always try to choose love. And sometimes that also is a bit of a fantasy, because sometimes you are genuinely hurt and pissed off and you have to go through that because the only way out is through. And there's so many times I'm, you know, hurt and pissed off by Gwen and she's hurt and pissed off by me. And
so that hasn't stopped since you're no longer
married.
It's not just blissful, everything's love. The love is still messy.
Yeah, of course, absolutely, because we're human and humans are messy. And albeit we try to be as holier than now as we wish we could be, we're still messy. And so for me, it's like, okay, I just let those emotions the best I can flow through me and not throw them at Gwen. And try to be as mindful as I can be with my emotions. And I'm not perfect at it, no way. But regardless, I always still end up choosing to continue our friendship and the relationship and the community vision, because love ultimately is my guiding force. And I would rather have love and harmony with through all of the sort of challenges than have friction and separation. And I think that's the way I operate. I don't know about Gwen.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think forgiveness and compassion and trust in a greater journey are my guiding lights and my North Star. I see, particularly for this relationship that I have with Liz as a co-creator and a muse, and also as a business owner and co-founder, entrepreneur, I see a bigger vision. So when we have these momentary conflict points, yes, okay, they can be hurtful. Yes, they can feel very big in the moment. But ultimately, once I've had the space to zoom out and look at them, they don't matter. They don't matter. When you're looking at the course of your life and what you have here and the time that we have to be on this planet, they don't matter. There are much bigger things in the world that matter. And yes, as she said, sometimes it's messy. We're very human. We're very different. We're also in moments of pressure. We run a business. We hold a vision. We're trying to create something that is not seen. There aren't any templates for what we're doing. And ultimately, that is what I hold on to rather than these moments of blame or shame or frustration. You know, here in our human experience, I do want to come into peace within myself. I think that everybody would want that for themselves. And I think that coming back to forgiveness and compassion are a fast route to be able to neutralize any kind of conflict with somebody else. And also the trust in something greater. This is the beauty. This is the beauty of relating. Yes, I would like to have less conflict in my life, sure. But it's not about the rupture. It's about the repair. It's not about the conflict. It's about how you love each other through it. It's about how you come out the other side and you've grown and you've become more aware. Can you learn something deeper about yourself? You know, you talk about relationships, not just this one I have with Liz, but all relationships that I've had in my life. It's an exchange. We are here to gift each other something, whether it's a romantic relationship or a friendship, but particularly in those intimate romantic relationships, even the ones that have not worked out, even the ones that have ended in a way that feels dramatic and messy and sometimes toxic even, there is still a gift, there is still an exchange.
I love this expression, play to win, don't play not to lose. I love it. I love that way of being with the world. And it's so interesting how we have these childhood attachment patterns. We have these different mental health templates. We have these different temperaments. And we're so often drawn passionately to the very people who are going to spark and trigger the things in us that we most need to work on. And a romantic partnership can be an extraordinary spiritual vehicle. And yet it can hurt so much. And you can get hurt and be like, I'm not fucking doing that again. I'm not fucking doing that again. But that is to close off to life, because would you rather play not to lose, even by not playing at all, or get back in the ring with your new wisdom and try something different and look at yourself as you were talking about training up a spiritual muscle. It really is a spiritual muscle, truly, truly. And I consider not just a festival as a physical thing, but the idea of festival, the idea of living life like a festival. And a festival is a fucking training ground spiritually in many ways. Yes, of course, we dance and we celebrate and stuff, but it's also like everything is heightened, everything is expanded, and we have different choice points in those environments. And when we carry that with us, we're carrying that sort of presence with our lived experience. And to me, that's what's most edifying about a festival. And also that's what's most edifying about love. And so I love that there's a festival of love that is Colors of Love. And I just love that you went through a separation and you still did the festival. And that there's no, it's still a messy story. It's not, it's like we got married and now everything's great, happily ever after. We broke up, but we did it right. But now everything's great, happily ever after. There isn't a happily ever after, because wouldn't that be boring? That would mean the game's over. The game keeps going. And I just love that. So kudos to the two of you for continuing to show up, including today for this podcast. Why Copenhagen? Why did you choose this place?
We met here, firstly. So we, by divine timing, if you will, we were in the same dance floor at the same time where we met and became friends. And I was here on a spiritual journey and trying to seek a better way of being in myself. And I ended up on Copenhagen, meeting incredible teachers to help me do that at the time. And whenever I think was the same.
Yeah, I'd ended up by chance in Copenhagen after having been bedridden for a year in 2011, actually. I was bedridden with an autoimmune disease. And I was guided by someone to take some time in Thailand. When I was finally better after a year, I was well enough to go and learn proper yoga and meditation. And so I, by chance, ended up in Thailand. And it's very serendipitous that I found Copenhagen. It was purely by way of searching for a sanctuary. I literally Googled the night before I left for Thailand, what do I need? Okay, do I need a yoga center? Do I need a retreat? And I just thought, I need a sanctuary. And I wrote Thailand Sanctuary, and it led me to the Sanctuary Thailand, which is on Copenhagen.
There's a yoga studio called The Sanctuary here.
Yeah. And it was really by divine chance that I ended up on this island. And within 2 weeks of being on Copenhagen, I was having a full-blown, what my friend calls the quintessential spiritual awakening. I was having a full-blown kundalini awakening. My body was changing. My mind was shifting perspective. I was having an expansion of my consciousness within 2 weeks, and everything that I knew was about to change. And I met Liz quite soon after that, when I was on a journey of trying to understand my new way of living in a way that I understood the world to be with me and for me and not against me, which is how I'd lived for many years before that realization.
I love island vortexes. My favorite places in the world are all island vortexes, including Burning Man. Black Rock City is an island, and you can get island fever. It's a full-on island. I like Ibiza, I like Bali, I like Copenhagen. There are some issues, however, with some of these places, and I think especially like Bali and Copenhagen, both have some challenges. This escapist fantasy of going to this faraway place where we're doing our healing journeys and we're coming with a lot of agency and a lot of resources, and we come to this place, and in this place there's all this magic and synchronicity, and there's something really alive here, and there's healing arts that are being taught and being received. And yet it is also an island in Thailand.
And not only are there many Thai people here, there are also many people who have escaped the conflict in Myanmar who are here, who are working in the restaurants and who do not speak Thai, by the way. So all that kap and kap is not, it's jesuba actually. Point being, it's culturally complex to come to a place like this. And we must be careful about this kind of neo-colonial spiritual bypassing that is rife in these spaces. And it's interesting because those of us who are a bit savvy will name it. So there's people who will just ignore it and pretend, oh, this is Hawaii. And then there are people who are savvy enough to name it. But what is the next step, aside from just naming, okay, this is problematic, there's stuff going on here. How do we honor Thai people, Thai culture? How do we take responsibility for ourselves in these places? For example, it is not appropriate to be in a supermarket in a bikini here. Thai culture does not appreciate that. That is offensive here. A lot of people don't know that. So there's just even to begin with, how do we approach this place as guests on this island? And then how do we collaborate and how do we really make real contact with people of another culture in this place? So the two of you throw an event on an island in Thailand. And I'm curious how you both have wrestled with that question of what does it mean to make real contact with the local people here, to honor and include them, to acknowledge their wants and needs, and to not have this be a kind of neo-colonial escapist playground for well-resourced people who look the same as the three of us look. How have you approached this particularly challenging issue?
Well, I think the first thing that we did was actually leave ourselves, leave Koh Phangan and try and discover the rest of Thailand. I mean, when I first came here, I learned as much Thai as I could before I arrived in Thailand, only to realize that everyone here was Burmese. And then I needed to learn some Burmese. And I spent many years on this island experiencing, like you said, this bubble of healing and nature. And I realized I needed to get out into Thailand and actually experience Thai culture and go to places where they spoke no English and where I was forced to communicate and to connect with the local people in a different way that happens on this island. And I realized just how much this island has become a bubble of neo-colonialism. And we actually moved our event to somewhere else in Thailand with the intention that we would be able to be of some benefit to that community, to the Thai community, by way of inclusion of the local people, by way of connecting people with their arts and crafts, the local women, where we now are. And our intention for going forward is to be in Thailand long term and create a year-round experience for people. But it needs to be integrated into the local community. It has to provide some benefit. Otherwise, why are we here? So it's an ongoing journey for us as Colors of Love. I can't say that we have been perfect in this journey so far. You know, we've had lots of people in a global community coming to our events from all around the world. And we have, in the past few years, had more and more domestic and Thai guests, but it needs to go beyond that. How does it benefit the community around that it will eventually impact, you know, that it does effectively impact?
And what are some of the tangible ways, the specific ways that Colors of Love is giving back to the local community, and what are the plans for that to grow?
In the coming iterations of Colors of Love in 2025, we are going to be working more with our local community. The women in our area suffer a lot of domestic violence, and we want to create an art sort of community for them to be able to do their natural dyeing, come together in a safe space where they can also be able to work at the festival and give them an outlet away from their home life, because they suffer a lot at home in the area and the village where we do our festival. And so with that information, our business that we have in Thailand with our Thai business partner, we're going to create a local foundation for them
Yeah, we would like to support a women's cooperative there, and it's already in its fledgling stages. But if we can have some way of accelerating that into being a more tangible space for them, that is our intention for the forthcoming year.
So Colors of Love is happening this year in a slightly different way. And this podcast will be released just on the doorstep of that. So dear listener, if you are in Thailand, this may be an opportunity for you just around the corner as you're listening to this. Considering the audience, there are many of you who are not in Thailand, and this is not going to be relevant this year, but perhaps in future years. But tell me a bit about what you're doing this year, because it's a little bit different than what the festival has been prior.
Yeah, so this year we're doing something a little different. Normally we have a 200-300 person gathering, happens every March. It's been happening for some years. This year we decided to postpone that main event until March 2025 and go on a slightly different journey of creating more frequent and more intimate experiences throughout the year. So we are having a 2-day journey, which is going to be all of the most key significant experiences within Colors of Love. So there will be celebration, there will be connection, there will be co-creation, there will be a dream activation ceremony, there will be music and dancing and being together, there will be community dining, there will be a place for us to see each other and connect with ourselves in that space. And it will mostly be on a boat, because we wanted to take people into a neutral space. So we are blessed enough to be taking a ride out into the gorgeous surrounding waters, and we'll be sailing around and enjoying some of the local islands, connecting with the nature around here. I mean, this really is why we love being in Thailand. We're so blessed to be in the Kingdom of Thailand, is the nature is just so supportive and so inspiring and so nurturing. So we want to take people out into the sea, out to the nature, out to the islands. And it's a condensed version, it's 2 days, but it's going to be a really interesting and activating experience for everyone there. And I always find that when you have these groups of people, this will only be 70, there's such a powerful mirroring that happens within a container like that. People always have something for each other. There's always some very extraordinary connection points where people are really meant to be with each other in that moment. And what comes from that can be life-changing. So that's what I'm really interested to see. Who is coming to this experience? And what are they there for? And what are they going to come away with? And ultimately, we want people to be inspired in our experiences of Colors of Love to go out and share something positive in the world, to make some kind of impact with the energy and the resources that they have. So I'm excited to see how that develops.
We are going to end with dream activation, because I also like dream activation. I like to activate my dreams. And I'm a very lucky person in that I'm literally on this island living a dream I had when I was 13 years old. When I was 13 years old, I was with my family visiting the island of Corfu, where my mom and dad met, and I was writing a book. And at the time, I was writing a book that was a bit of a ripoff of Lord of the Rings, because I was 13. So I was writing my book, an author, and I was doing the thing. It's very much what a 13-year-old would write about, like dragons and swords and all the thing. But I remember and I would write in the morning and I'd go swimming in the afternoon. And I remember at the time I was like, someday I will do this for real. Someday I will be an adult and I will write an adventure story on an island, and I will write in the morning and I will go swimming in the afternoon. Someday I will do that. And right now in this moment, the reason that I'm on this island is because I am living that dream. I'm writing the book that I've had in my heart for a number of years. It's happening. I'm 300 pages into it. It's real. That's what I'm doing here. So I'm literally in this moment. I am activating one of the deepest dreams of my being. I am living in this moment of dream, and I'm deeply grateful. And so I share this, dear listener, because it's a magical thing to be living a dream. And one of the features of Colors of Love is the idea of dream activation. And so I'd love for you to describe dream activation, how it works as part of the festival, and if you have any juicy stories of how someone's dream has been directly activated by their engagement with colors of love.
So dream activation is a process of claiming, sharing, and owning your dream. And obviously we got married at our very first Colors of Love. That was the central point. That was the ceremony of the experience. And we believe that all festivals, all gatherings need to have an aspect of ceremony. It's the way that we as humans come together and have done for centuries. Ceremony is very important. And so we decided, once it moved on from our wedding into the first Colors of Love, that we wanted to create a space where people could realize what it is they wanted to be, do, create, and share in the world, and what they wanted to gift to the world. What were the colors of love they wanted to share? So we created a dream activation ceremony, which is a very beautiful, very humbling, very inspiring moment where every single person in the experience takes it in turn, one after another, to take a microphone, standing in a giant golden pyramid, and share their dream. They have one question to answer. What is your dream? And it may seem simple, but it is one of the most vulnerable moments I've ever witnessed in people. To truly share what is in their heart. What is their big dream? What is their why? And surrounded by a few hundred people, something happens in that moment, whether it's something cosmic and spiritual, whether it is something neurological and subconscious. But when people vocalize their dream, they come into a space of ceremony, they share it with others, they're witnessed, they are held accountable with themselves for that dream. And then they are encouraged by an entire community to go towards that vision. Something in their life happens. And people naturally somehow start to go towards it. Doors open that maybe they wouldn't have seen before. And I truly believe that if all people were living their dream, and that can sound very altruistic and it can sound very privileged as well, but if all people had a vision and they committed to this, I truly believe the world would be a better place. We are coming into a time now in our existence as humans where it is the age of AI. It is the age of automation. Things are going to change very much for us in the years to come. There is an opportunity for human beings to shift their life where they can and create something that is meaningful. Obviously, this is not easy for everyone in the world. There are places of suffering. There are places of war. There is places of under-resourced communities. I recognize my privilege in being able to sit here and share this. But everybody has a dream. Even people that have nothing, they still hold a dream in their heart. And although we get to do this in a very enjoyable and free way, people coming to a festival on a beach, celebrating life, how lucky, really, how blessed, how privileged. But the concept, the movement of dream activation for us is beyond that. And we want to create some kind of platform, some kind of space where it is not limited, this experience, to people being able to come to a fancy experience on a beach and share their dream. Dreams are real for everyone. And how can we bring together people that have a dream with those that can support it to be realized? And often what I see and understand is that people in communities where they are under-resourced in certain ways, those people have dreams that could really shift the reality for their community, but they don't always have the support, the resources. How can you bring people together that can support that? How can you make this experience more open and without barriers and walls to it? So that's something that is, for us going forward, a priority and a guiding direction.
There's a quote, I'm not sure who it is by, I think it might have been one of the transcendentalist philosophers, but we used it when we did Fest 300 back in the day, which is, go confidently in the direction of your dreams, live the life you have imagined. And I think that's part of what brings us to festival culture, because they're imagination spaces. They're places to experiment with our dreams. They're places to be different avatars of ourselves. Maybe my dream is to have hot girl summer for a summer in the winter in Thailand. You know, we have these different dreams and they can change. And, you know, I think it's so special to create spaces where we are explicitly inviting dreaming. I have this thing called the Audacity Game, which is a dreaming exercise where you have a conversation with someone and you ask them about their dreams and what they want and how they want to be in the world. And then you encourage audacity and you ask them to be more specific and more audacious. It's a dialectic process of understanding what you want, because what holds many of us back, certainly those of us who have enough resources to have a good starting place, is that many of us don't know what our dreams are. And we don't even give ourselves permission to dream, because how could we dream big? Well, I could never be Beyonce. I don't know, you could be Beyonce. Maybe. How can we dream audaciously? And I love that there is dream activation as part of Colors of Love, because if love is our work made visible, then dreams are our cartography to that. Dreams are how we get there. And this intersection of love and dreams, very special. So I appreciate that you have brought that into the world. As a closing for the two of you, my dear friends, what are you dreaming about right now? What are your dreams? Colors of Love was once a dream and it's activated in the world. What are you dreaming about?
As Gwen touched on, we are working to build a platform to activate at least 1 million dreams by 2030. And that sounds like one of those lofty, out there visions. But for us, creating this platform to help resource people's dreams through education, finance, support, whether it be spiritual, mental, physical, emotional support, because it takes a lot to activate a dream. Having a dream is one thing, but actually making it into a reality is a completely different story. And it's a life's work to sit down and write a book. You have to really take yourself there and commit to it. And the dreams that we've seen become a reality have all come, whether it's taken a year, 2 years, or 3 years for some people, it's taken them committing to it fully to make it happen. But there's always the same challenges people have. It's the resources, whether it's the lack of education, the lack of financial support, mentally having to muscle up every day and say, I can do this, I'm worthy of this, I am doing this, and having that emotional support as you go through the process of making a dream reality. We want to be able to provide that platform for people. So, yeah, the next year is a development phase for us as we build this platform where people will be able to invest in other people's dreams, people will be able to support with education of other people's dreams, and we'll be able to touch a broader spectrum of humans. So that's our dream as a collective, the two of us, Colors of Love. And obviously we have our own individual dreams, but...
And what are those, Liz? What is your individual dream?
That's a good question, because I normally have to think about that before the dream activation portal. So in this moment, I think for me, I've devoted so much of the last 7 years of Colors of Love in service to this process of supporting people to have a space to activate their dreams. And I think at times I've gone this way. I wrote my own book and published my own book a couple of years ago, and I gone this way. I get torn into different dreams and then I get separated from this one. But really my dream is to really have the patience and the belief in myself as an entrepreneur to ride the emotional waves of being an entrepreneur, to continue to be in service to this. And I think the only thing for me is to continue to resource myself emotionally and my nervous system emotionally to be an entrepreneur and to be in service to this vision and not waver from that, because the only thing that holds me back is the highs and the lows of being an entrepreneur. For me, just resourcing myself enough to this year stand and really go for this vision that I have, unwavering vision. Mm.
Love that. Gwen, where are you at with your dreaming right now?
Well, as Liz shared, we have a collective dream that we both feel very strongly about. But I have realized over the last years, because I am so dedicated to Colors of Love, I am so dedicated to creating a space for other people's dreams, I've realized that the underlying message for me is that I need to activate my own personal dreams. And it's really interesting. I see how people's creations in the world are often what they needed for themselves. They find healing through something, and that is then the path of what they're going to be sharing. And since I was a child, I have been a big dreamer. I have visions of the future. I have visions of what I want to create. And I have dreams that are unfulfilled. And so I think in this space of dream activation, of celebration, I wanted to create somewhere where people could get closer to making that happen. And it's taken me a full 7 years of running Colors of Love to realize that I am also creating a distraction from a dream which I've held since a child, which I continuously ignore.
And what dream is that?
To go fully into music, to become a channel of sound, to produce our music as Wild Surrender, to be able to use my voice to activate people's hearts and help them come back to themselves on a dance floor. And it's my biggest dream, apart from Colors of Love, which is so glorious in its manifestation, it is my biggest secret dream. You know, it's the dream that I try not to tell people about so much because I know there's a part of me which keeps hiding from it.
You just told everyone on a podcast, so good luck keeping that secret. It's literally the opposite of a secret is a podcast, so there you go. Hopefully that will be an activation in itself.
Thank you.
Well, my friends, thanks for coming on my show. This is so exciting. It's so fun to learn about the energetic process of this. I love the messiness of the colors of love. To me, that's the big win here. The messiness of the colors of love, all the different colors, and all the colors are messy. If you just have two colors, then they'll blend pretty easily. You have all the colors, you're going to have a lot going on in your palette. So may we have messy love, and may we go confidently in the direction of our dreams.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Love you, Ivan.
Aww.
Thank you for joining us for Life is a Festival. If you liked the show, you can support it by sharing it with your friends, following it on Spotify, or reviewing it on iTunes. If you'd like to get more involved, you can join our Facebook group, Life is a Festival, where we talk about the show and you can suggest new guests. If you really liked the show and maybe want a little bit more, visit my digital tip jar at patreon.com/lifeisafestival.com. Whatever you do, I hope today's podcast helped you make your life just a little bit more like a festival, and I'll see you on the dance floor.